You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
And in the studio, I am joined by Brent Caldwell and Sam Meikle, who are different respective directors from this new play, Sounds Like Dunedin, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night lands in the 1980s. More dinner, folks. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Kia ora tātou, kia te pai.
Nice. I'm very glad to hear. Are you guys had an okay commute to the station?
Yeah, I'm North Dunedin based, so just down the road.
Oh, must have been a travesty. Must have been a real
I think there must have been eight cars at the traffic light, so yeah, it was a real traffic jam.
It's been really empty today for me so far. I biked from like the valley and there's nothing on the roads. Yeah. It was lovely.
Nice.
It was gorgeous.
Nice.
We're here to talk about, of course, this new play, which is starting very soon on Thursday. Very, very exciting stuff. Goes for what, 2 weeks?
Two-ish weeks.
Yeah.
About nine shows.
Yeah. One of the taglines for this play is a question which asks, what do you get when you cross a love triangle, a vice chancellor, and flying nun? I want to know, what do you get when you mix those things?
Well, you get a play which is famous for being about mixed up topsy-turvy 12th night of Christmas chaos set in Dunedin in the University of Otago in the 1980s. We're taking Shakespeare and we're dropping him into that time period. And of course, the beautiful thing of that is that we just layer in all the best music from Dunedin in that time.
Why 12th night and not something like Macbeth or Romeo and Juliet?
Well, that's a really good question. I think it's a seasonal comedy, and plus there's so much gloom and doom around. Come on, Zach, you know, have a look around the world. We need a bit of a laugh, and coming into Christmas, I think there's probably nothing better than sort of saying, you know, people have been having a laugh and enjoying drama for hundreds and hundreds of years, so why not take a play that was first performed in Dunedin 150 years ago, and it was, in fact, Twelfth Night was first performed in Aotearoa.
Really?
In Otipoti.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Why do I know that? Because I did a dramaturgy paper and it was my casebook study this year.
All right.
So, yeah, big call out to Amanda Martin. She did a great job. I learned heaps.
Nice.
So, yeah, and Twelfth Night is just something that transcends time and space, and it's as relevant and as funny and as mixed up and as bonkers now as it was then. And, you know, I was here at the university in the 1980s and, yep, it was a wee bit like that.
I want to know, this is a respective question for both of you, how did you all go about approaching, you know, splicing the Twelfth Night with the student and music scene at the university from the 1980s? How do you go about splicing those to capture the best of both worlds?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty wild concept. It's the first time when jumping on a show that I've had to have someone actually pitch it to me with a PowerPoint. And it took a very long time for it to really straighten out in my head and make sense. Because it still could have been great fun if it was just Shakespeare and we'll take a break and now we'll play a song. But it's been amazing, especially in these last few rehearsals where we're doing full runs and everything, where you see that it's knitted together pretty perfectly. I can't really even put into words why it works. It just does. But along with the set and some awesome lighting and everything, together all the arts just kind of combine. And it does. It just flows. Without even fundamentally changing the script or changing the characters other than costume and set, it's just knitted together and so well. I could never have really seen what Brent saw.
I think that for me, I had a conversation with a member of the university faculty here, Sheena Townsend. She and I are both involved at the Globe, and we sat down and had a cup of coffee one day and said, okay, we're doing Twelfth Night in December. And then almost at the same time, we said, we should set it in Dunedin. And then it was just like a piece of string. And I was saying, well, I could see how it would fit in the time when I was here back in the 1980s. And for example, you know, a girl has to dress herself as a man to work in the Duke's office. And I could see that in the 1980s, the glass ceiling was well and truly established.
Yeah.
So I could see how a young woman would have to try and be quite manly to be accepted within the office spaces. So we thought, oh, that could work. She'd have to dress up. What could she wear? She could wear a leather jacket. Oh, I know a great song about that. And then, yeah, it just, they all fit seamlessly. And the story is about people who are in love, who are in love with love, or who are completely misguided about what they think love is, or that they've lost someone that they love. Mm. And a lot of the songs from that time are quite melancholic.
They are. Pink Frost, man. Pink Frost is super sad.
Yeah, and yet a song like Joe'd Out, which by the Verlaines, which is very, very melancholic, is such a sweet song. And the show opens with the Clean song, Anything Could Happen, because the subtitle of Shakespeare's Twelfth Night is Or What You Will, because it's on the 12th night of Christmas, that's when it's topsy-turvy. The servants are served by their masters, there's japes, there's tricks, there's all sorts of things. And when I read Or What You Will, I just said, yeah, anything could happen. I went, bing! Yeah, great. So that's the song that opens the show. And, like Sam says, I had to pitch it to a few people and make sure people understood. And we were really lucky. We had support from Dr. Ian Chapman, who's recently left the university, but he came and gave a talk on the Dunedin Sound to all our cast because, you know, many of them weren't around last millennium. And so it's an education for them. And he shared his knowledge just beautifully. He performed a couple of songs. And I also spoke with the likes of Francesca Griffin and Bob Scott and the late Martin Phillips. And they all gave their blessing and were really supportive of us using the music.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's so lovely. Well, speaking of the music, did you try and go for getting a bit of every band for this new play?
The show's not long enough.
That's true.
But what I did is I basically fell back on songs that have stuck with me over the years, or that when I hear them, they just take me back to those times, and or they're songs that are very special to me, and sort of like I always talk about it, it's like the soundtrack of my life. You know, there's always a period in your life where the music of it, as soon as you hear it, it takes you right back there. And when I hear, you know, some of the songs that we're using, I think, yeah, it's. And not here, but also overseas, because I saw a lot of these bands when they toured in Europe, like I was mentioning before, you know, Straitjacket Fits and The Chills. And I remember flying to Paris to see The Chills open for the Stone Roses. You know, that's just outrageous stuff. And you hear Pink Frost being played at La Cigale on the Left Bank. You know, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty special. Yeah. How did you get into the Dunedin Sound, Sam?
Well, I suppose I'm engaged with the current Dunedin Sound. My parents were very much big Dunedin Sound people at uni around at the same time, and my dad's really, really kept that going. So I was always exposed to it growing up, but I certainly have a more modern perspective on what's happening in Dunedin. That's why it was kind of a challenge to come in, especially with some of the ways that these bands wrote and recorded. Mm. It was very DIY, and that's the charm of it, 100%, but it's also reflected in the structures and even the recordings we were working with, which makes it a challenge to bring in a kind of structured way that you kind of want for theatre. But yes, no, I suppose I take the kind of fresh Dunedin perspective, being engaged with all the bands and kind of thinking about this is our scene now. I can kind of translate that to what it was like back in the 80s, because it's very much still a DIY project here. The goalposts have kind of shifted because technology we have available to us is so broad and impressive now. But I can kind of understand it from an internal kind of way on how these bands interacted with each other and wrote together and just working with whatever they had.
The thing that strikes me is, like, 40 years ago, it was sort of groundbreaking for Radio 1 when it started.
Yeah.
I remember we were absolutely stunned to hear the bands that we would go and see here at the university on the radio.
Whoa, yeah.
And then to have a music station that said, yeah, we are going to play New Zealand music, and no, it doesn't have to come from a record produced by one of the big record companies. We're going to play real stuff. And you know, there was no Kiwi quota back then where you had to play Kiwi music on the radio. That was like revolutionary. And you, and like Sam says, now you look around, and in the same way up at the Globe yesterday, we circled up as a group because Brian Beresford has recently passed away, who was a real tall figure for the Globe Theatre, and we had this idea that we're standing on the shoulders of giants. And so when I walk around the university now, because I'm back here studying theatre, you know, and see the bands that are playing, I think, yeah, there's quite a history. And it's your 40th birthday this year,
yes,
isn't it? So, well, yeah, you think 40 years ago, you know, Radio 1 was born,
yeah,
and now it's fully fledged, it's grown up, and it does such an amazing job. But it did start somewhere. And I think that's really the beauty of this show. We're bringing that music to a whole new generation of people to say, look, things are great now, but you know, it all started and you know, began as the seeds from a lot of the music that's played in this show.
For sure. I do want to touch on two things. I do want to touch on, you know, you mentioned before that we had our 40th this year.
Yeah.
Will Radio 1 get representation? And, you know, we are standing on the shoulders of giants, I think it's important to definitely look to contemporary acts as well as admiring the unique cultural moment that was the Dunedin Sound. So I want to know, you know, if anyone gets representation in this play, and some of your favourite contemporary or tipoti bands.
Oh, give me some time to think, because there's so many at the moment.
Well, the moment you walk in the front of the Globe Theatre, the first thing you're going to see is the original poster that says, with the Lone Ranger holding the silver bullet, and it says, "The Legend Begins."
Yeah.
And I think it's a lovely moment. And then when you walk into the foyer, there's displays of a lot of the gig posters that I borrowed from the venues that I went to see the bands. And I've had in all my flats and everything for the last however many years. And in terms of specifically mentioning Radio 1 in the play, no, we don't, but but that's not to say that we couldn't get a nice little, if we had a couple of R1 stickers, we could place them very beautifully on the stage.
We've got plenty to spare, my friend.
Okay.
We've got plenty to spare.
Because we do have a music box that's part of the set, and we can pop that on there. And we've got an amazing set designed by Sophie Welvet, and that itself is a star of the show.
Fantastic.
And what was the second part of your question?
Favourite contemporary Ortsy-Portsy acts that you've got your eye on.
Well, a band I really got to know recently was Pearly.
Oh yeah,
And obviously I did a wee interview with them a few months back, and also I obviously know the members of Emily Alice through other shows that I'm in. So they're probably the bands I'd probably say I have know a wee bit about now. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's also the Friendlies. I know the guitarist in the Friendlies.
I've had my thinking time, and my verdict, the bands at the moment that really excite me, and I am really keen to see what happens in the next kind of couple years, I'm going Emily Alice. 100%, and I think they've got some amazing plans. Bunchy's Big School.
Oh yeah,
I love them. I do live with them, but I think they're awesome.
They're great.
And then the Beatniks and Ivy. I'm just so excited to see where they're going. Mm-hmm. Both of them are just some of the best gigs I've ever been to be honest.
Yeah,
including paid concerts. It's just an experience with them.
Yeah, I saw Beatniks for the first time at BFS, which was a great time. And I need to go to an Ivy concert because I hear they really put on a show.
Oh yeah.
I've heard very good things. Well, thank you both for coming in this morning.
No worries.
And talking about this new play. Sounds like Dunedin, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night lands in the 80s. Where can people buy tickets for this gig?
Tickets are available through Humanitix, and also if you go to the Globe Theatre's Facebook page or their website, you'll find the links there. But yeah, we want everyone to get in the Ortsy-Portsy and make sure that they come along.
Fantastic stuff. Alrighty, thank you very much for coming in, Sam and Brent. It was lovely chatting with you both.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Alrighty, folks. That was Brent Caldwell and Sam Meikle, who are running the new play, Sounds Like Dunedin Shakespeare, The Twelfth Night. Lands in the 1980s, coming up very shortly.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.